Welcome to Entrepreneur Showdown Presents with your hosts, Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks.
It's Thursday morning, and that means it's time for another episode of Entrepreneur Showdown Presents, where today we continue SaaS Entrepreneur Month with a SaaS entrepreneur who specializes in wedding photography, but has a couple different businesses going on, and speaks to us about the foundation, which is currently still an open enrollment. So now's a good time to learn a little bit more about Dane Maxwell and Andy Drish's foundation and see if maybe it's something right for you. So we'll link to that in the show notes. Also in the show notes, check out something that Joe and I are doing that's super exciting, and it's called the Holiday Mashup. We're joining forces with Cynthia Sanchez from Oh So Pinteresting and Jared Easley from the Star of the Doubts podcast, and we're mashing up our podcasts all together, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and we can't wait for you to hear it. We can't wait for you to join us on the live recordings of these mashups. So for more information about the Holiday Mashup, head on over to holidaymashup.net. But now, without further ado, let's throw it to Esther DeBoer. Today on Entrepreneur Showdown Presents, we welcome on an entrepreneur who seems to be a real self-starter with multiple entrepreneurial ventures already under her belt. However, her latest seems to be the most promising. And I'm sorry, Esther, how do you pronounce your last name?
Esther DeBoer, which is Dutch. DeBoer. Yes.
Esther DeBoer is a graduate of Dane Maxwell and Andy Drish's The Foundation and made the most of one of their main teachings, which is to get your project funded before even beginning development. We last heard from Esther a few months ago on Mixergy with Andrew Warner when she was about to launch her SaaS product, ShootZilla. But we want to know how things are going now and to dig a little bit deeper into what those first few months have been like. So without further delay, Esther DeBoer, welcome to the showdown.
Thank you very much, Dan.
And you're testing my last name pronunciation skills there. So
very good.
Thank you for that, keeping me on my toes now. Esther, you have a lot going on. You have a couple little ones running around. You have multiple entrepreneurial ventures that you're in. How do you find time for all this going on at once?
Oh, I prioritize every day and every weekend. And yeah, I have to because a lot of times it's growing. It's overwhelming me as well. So I just have to keep prioritizing everything.
What kind of systems do you have in place to help you prioritize?
Well, I have another company and I try to do all the work for the other company on dedicated days because I work with a team of people on that company. So we just come together for a couple of days each month. And besides those days, I don't do anything except for in the evening. So I just block time in the evening to just do help desk things and stuff like that. And then I have all day reserved for ShootZilla work, so I can really focus and get a lot of things done that need more time, more thinking time, more creation time.
One, I think it's interesting because a lot of people also try to do that same kind of prioritizing thing, but work starts to back up. Like their dedicated time that they already have in place turns out to not be enough for all the different jobs they're trying to do, and work just builds up and builds up. Do you ever experience that, and then you have to sacrifice something else?
Yes. Well, I sacrificed my wedding photography business. I will do less shooting of weddings myself next year. And that's fine because that was in my planning. So that's good. And another thing that I'm doing is implementing a lot of outsourcing. So I hired a couple of virtual assistants and they helped me with small tasks. And that's really awesome.
So is this wedding photography and all your businesses seem to somewhat relate to this?
Yeah.
Was this the photography aspect of it? Was that your first true passion? And is that unfortunate that you're having to sacrifice that now for other things?
It's my first true passion. I quit my day job in 2009 to become a photographer. Well, actually, to just photograph, take photographs, because that was my hobby. And I didn't know what to do else. So I just wanted to spend more time doing things I love, like a sabbatical. But I started making money from day one. So I just became a wedding photographer. And now I'm finding that I'm trading time for money, even doing the things I love. And I want to do less of that. If I want to do a wedding, it's because I really love to do it and not because I have to. So I want to do less weddings, and that's really a choice. And that's also why I started the foundation, to get more recurring income, to make it more scalable.
So when you, because this was an interesting part, because you left, it was T-Mobile, correct?
Yeah.
And you went and you started just doing freelancing photography. How much of that were you doing while you were still at T-Mobile? How long or how many gigs were you doing?
Nothing at all. I just did it in the weekends. I photographed my children, you know, stuff like that. It was a hobby. That's it. But I was buying more and more expensive gear. and I was really frustrated that I couldn't spend more time with it. But with two kids, it's just not possible. You really have to take a day off to really invest some time into photography. So, and I didn't know what else to do within the corporate world. I didn't find any more challenge there. So I quit my job. And everybody thought I was crazy. You hear that a lot, probably. And then I just started doing things I love. And I created a concept called beach sessions, which is practically just going to the beach with people and taking pictures of them. And they have a nice time because they're on the beach and they love to hang out together with their friends. And I created the memories of that. And that became a concept and that went really well. And next to that, I also did the wedding photography of starting to do that. And that also went really well. And it's just, I think I'm already a bit practiced in marketing and branding. So I knew how to sell my photography, even when I didn't want to make it a big business. It turned out to be a big business.
Well, you said you didn't freelance or anything before you left T-Mobile. So you didn't have any clients when you left T-Mobile. So you had to just find someone really quick just to, I guess, pay the bills, right?
Yeah. And so I was lucky enough because my T-Mobile gave me one job. And I had to take photographs of the committee like the first day that I was on my own.
Wait, so you quit and then they said, okay, here, we'll help you with, now that you've quit the job, we'll help you by giving you one.
Something like that. Yeah, it was only one job. And and it was a lot of fun. So that paid the bills of my first month. And after that, I made enough money to pay the bills every month.
Okay, and now you were with them for quite a while. Probably it looks like that was one of the jobs you held the longest so far in your career.
Yeah.
What did you do for them? And did that translate anything to what you do now?
Yes, definitely. I was a senior product marketer for their website. So basically always managing all the teams that wanted something on the website, because the website was for customer service, but also for sales and also for development and also for the corporate department. So everybody wanted something. And I had to streamline all those interests and talk to the development department and talk to the marketing department to see how everything went. A lot of talking, a lot of meetings. And I'm happy. That's a thing of the past.
But the talkings and the meetings, those are very important things within the foundation, is actually talking to people and finding the pain and all of this type thing. So let's lead into that. What was the hardest thing you found before we get into the actual product itself? What were some of the hard parts you found about the foundation and what they had you do?
The hard part is the insecurity, whether you're working on the right thing, the insecurity, and then the procrastination that it brings. Because, well, if you feel insecure, you take things and tend to wait. And I knew I was doing it, so I really was fighting it. But it's still hard, you know. And that was the hardest thing. And even though I did do everything, it's still, yeah. And it will stay hard. I mean, you always, in entrepreneurship, there are so many insecurities. So
What pieces did you find? Did you find yourself procrastinating with the most?
I think I procrastinated on all parts. Yeah, every time there were 2 weeks passing, and I knew I had to take a certain action, like hire a developer, or create mockups, or create a plan, or create a a PowerPoint to sell, pre-sell my product, you know. Every time it took a while.
Okay, so you procrastinated all the a little bit of everything, but some parts you probably enjoyed and some parts you it sounds like maybe you dreaded having to do. What were the parts that you dreaded the most?
I don't know. I think I was a bit, how do you say that? I'm not looking forward to making the calls in the beginning, like how they call it, this idea extraction to find.
And are these cold calls?
They can be. They don't have to be. And, but because it was in the beginning and I was really pumped up for the foundation to start. So I was really making my mindset to doing those calls. So I didn't procrastinate that much on those calls, even though I didn't like them the best.
So what was your mindset shift that you had to do to yourself to encourage yourself to do these cold calls, even though you weren't necessarily, that wasn't going to be your favorite task? You said you were so excited to get things started that they maybe weren't as hard as the other things. What was that? What did you do in your mind to justify doing these cold calls?
I did an exercise that's a Byron Katie exercise. And I wrote down my fears of picking up the phone, like they will think I will be disturbing them, or they will think I'm crazy, or they will think, what the hell is she talking about, you know? And I would wrote down those fears and I would ask myself, is it really true? And yeah, most of the times you can say, no, it's not true. They will not think that, because you don't know if they will think that, you know? Maybe they'll be happy for a nice diversion. And so I changed the negative thoughts in my mind, and that gave me enough courage to pick up the phone and do the calls. And they're always fun. The calls are fun. It's just, yeah, we're not used anymore to just pick up the phone and bother people or call them and ask them questions. We just, have forgotten how to be curious again. I don't know.
Well, usually we hear that they start with a warm email and then that they try to get the person on the phone. Were you sometimes bypassing that and just trying to call people right away and just hope that they answer, or how would that work?
Yeah, I worked one niche before I went to photography. And then I just did the cold calling because I wanted to experience the cold calling and see if it was really that horrible. And it was actually not so bad because I only did 4 calls, but they were all willing to talk to me for at least 20 minutes each. So it was really fun, actually. And it teaches you to be curious again about other people's business and what they do and how it works and what their challenges are. So it's really fun. And after that, I found myself thinking that I wanted to work in a niche that I really love, which is photography, and that I should just call photographers instead. And maybe I was putting that off because I was scared to, I had to deliver something if I was going to call photographers. But then I just started calling them. And because I am a wedding photographer myself, I had a lot of people in my network that I just could call. And so that were warm calls for me.
Well, so before we get back into that part, you said you had a niche before that you were trying to do that before you did the photography. What niche were you trying to get into first?
Moving companies.
And what were you trying to do with them?
Oh, just find their pain. See if I could build a solution for them. That's it. That's what you do in the foundation. You pick a niche. I don't know if you already discussed that with Andy and Dane, but there are certain criteria to pick a niche.
Yeah.
And then when you pick a niche, you just find people in the niche to contact and to see if you can have conversations with them to find their pain. And people are willing to pay you to solve their pain. So that's why you need to find the pain first.
So what was the roadblock that they all didn't have a similar pain, or that there weren't enough people to contact, or which one was it?
I didn't really find a good pain yet in 4 calls. So, and were my first calls. I did get a grasp of what the market looked like and what tools they were using and stuff like that. And that's all needed to make progress in your calls. You are more and more able to talk in their language with their terms. And you can say, oh, are you using that product or are you using that product? And so they know what you are talking about. So it's really useful to make a lot of calls, and then, yeah, you will get the hang of it after a while, and then you can dig deeper and deeper.
Okay. Well, and that was just my curiosity to see what you did before, because I guess usually with most people that we hear, they, when they find the niche they want to go to, and then you went to photography, which you already had a liking to, usually we hear that they kind of try and go and pick a niche that maybe they're interested in, but they don't know a lot about. But you actually did the opposite, and you went towards a niche that that you knew a lot about. Was that something they tried to say at first, like, don't do that? Or was there ever a talk about, hey, you already know too much about this niche, or you're already, I guess, trained in your thoughts about how this niche works, that you won't be able to find a good pain? Was there ever a conversation like that?
Yeah, I remember once on a one-on-one with Dane, in the beginning, when I said, well, I think I'm going for the photography niche. I'm doing some calls now here and there. And he said, yeah, no, people tried photography in the previous foundation class, but it's not going to work. So I was like, okay. And, but that's basically, he's only referring to the criteria for a successful niche. And one of the criteria is that photographers need to make a certain amount of profit or revenue. And a lot of photography businesses don't, because there are a lot of photographers out there who just do it on the side, or, yeah, not as a professional business, but more low profile. But I found that the criteria, if they already use and pay for monthly recurring software, that actually helps, that people are, even if they don't make enough money, they would still pay for recurring software, pay a recurring fee for software.
So what do you think your approach to these photographers was different than some of the other people that might have looked into that niche through the foundation, that caused you to be able to find a pain that had a solution you could create versus what they did?
Well, for me, it was very handy that I knew the niche, because I can see through all the different aspects of a photographer, the photography industry. I mean, a wedding photographer is something completely different than a commercial photographer or a fashion photographer. I mean, there's no comparing those. So I focused also in my idea extraction calls, I focused solely on wedding photographers. And I can imagine if you come into a niche without any knowledge, that you will start talking to 10 photographers, of which one is a pet photographer, one is a wedding photographer, one is a fashion photographer, and you'll get three different pains because they're not comparable. So that will make it more difficult if you're not, if you haven't spent enough time to get to know your market and to see the different niches within a niche, then it might slow you down or make you jump to the wrong conclusions.
Well, I find that interesting, because we've spoken to quite a number of people from the foundation already, and it seems like almost all of them have gone into niches that they had zero to little experience with, or even knowledge of, really. And that seems to kind of be what Dane and Andy teach at the foundation, is you don't need to have this knowledge. But to you, it seems like that was vital in your success thus far, was that you did have that knowledge. So where does that disconnect come in?
It's not vital, but you asked me what the difference could have been with the previous people who tried photographers.
So, yeah, exactly. So, but if it didn't work for them, but the same thing worked for you, then it seems like that was maybe what made it work versus what didn't.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know the people who tried it before, so I can't check it. But that could be one solution for me. And you're very right that you don't need the knowledge. You just need to investigate the industry and find those niches within a niche. Because if you don't know anything about a niche, then there might be a lot of niches hidden. How do you say that?
Well, before we get into the Shootzilla, I do want to ask one more question on this topic. And I know Dane and Andy, they bring a lot of their past successful students on as mentors, if they were to bring you on, would you maybe bring that perspective that, hey, it's maybe okay to go into a niche that you already have knowledge on? Whereas a lot of time, like even when we talk to Dane and Andy themselves, they almost discourage people from doing that because they want them to learn the niche from their perspective, from the perspective as a, you know, someone finding the pain versus someone that's already been in it. Would you bring that new perspective to it?
Yeah, I would. But I mean, I didn't go into the moving companies first without a reason. That was also for me to learn the ropes and learn how to do cold calls and learn how to set up an idea extraction call. Because when you already know people and you know the market, it's difficult to be as thorough in your research. So I completely agree with their approach. And I followed it, but it helped me get to the pain easier when I finally did chase the photography business.
So when we go into these, when you went into these idea extraction calls and you were looking for a pain in the wedding photography business, since you had already done some photography and such, was this already a pain that you knew about that you maybe were trying to validate, or did you find it and then you were like, oh, that was kind of something I had a problem with as well?
Yeah, the last one. And it didn't occur to me to scratch my own itch, as how you say it, but when I heard it over and over again, yeah, that thought came up. So I investigated that more.
So you didn't go into when you were trying to, I know you hadn't started ShootZilla yet, but what led to it, that was never a thought in your mind that you were trying to validate that idea. That just came up over and over in conversations. And that was an afterthought realization on your part that was a pain that you had when you were doing it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So when you started these conversations over the phone, you said you were very nervous about calling them. You're very nervous about cold calling and such. Did you have a certain script that you would have to kind of get you off starting and going, or how did that process work for you?
Yes, I did. I followed the guidelines from the idea extraction calls, which I don't remember by heart, but they follow a certain steps. And I think the first is, just go over their day by day business, you know, day by day activities to find out what really is in, sorry for my lousy English, how their day is filled with tasks. What kind of tasks are they doing on a day to day business? And then you can zoom in on tasks that sound tedious or that they tell you that are tedious and stuff like that. So you just find problems in their day-to-day activities.
Well, you had said before that you worried because you thought they'd be wasting you'd be wasting their time or they wouldn't want to talk to you. Did you find even just one or two that came across that you were bothering them or that they didn't want to talk to you?
No.
They all wanted to talk to you?
Yes.
Is that because they were all, you said before that maybe they were warm referrals or you already knew them before? Was it because of that or they were just all very open and honest?
No, I have to correct that. All the people in the Netherlands, they wanted to talk to me, but I also send out some emails to find photographers in the US and in other European countries. And that took me more effort, of course, to get them on the phone. So not everybody replied to my email or set up a meeting to call. So I have to correct that. But in the Netherlands, everybody wanted to talk, yeah.
So when you're talking to them, did you have a ton of different pains that you had to kind of pick and choose and weed out from? Or was this one that you developed ShootZilla from? Did they all have that at one point that you kind of were able to pick out and realize that was like the similar pain that they all had?
Yeah, this was by far, I think 80 or 90% of everybody I talked to experienced this pain. And there are already competitors out there who are solving the pain, but I found that the way they are solving it is not really solving the pain. So they do an effort, but how I hear the pain was described, I thought I could solve it better.
Well, let's actually get into what ShootZilla is then. And it's interesting that we started this conversation off talking about kind of time management and maybe project management. And that seems to be at the heart of what ShootZilla is. So can you give us an overview of ShootZilla and what it's meant, what pain it's meant to fix?
Yeah, well, wedding photographers are usually booked like 6 months or a year in advance. And in between that time, a wedding photographer sends a contract and sends them some details and has a couple of contact points between now and 6 or 12 months. And he has to remember when to send the second payment or the third payment, a reminder, stuff like that. And then after the wedding, there is, of course, the delivery of the images and blogging and Facebook previewing and making albums and stuff like that. So there are like 20 or 30 milestones for each wedding, for each client. And wedding photographers usually have 30 to 40 clients each year. So it's a lot to remember and a lot to plan. And a lot of photographers just did that by setting it in their calendar. And in ShootZilla, you can create your own workflow where you can write down all the different steps in your workflow. And then when you book a client, you put in their wedding date and all your milestones are plotted in the time. You don't have to remember anything anymore. And you have a nice visual client tracker that shows you exactly how far you've progressed with each workflow with each client. So you can visually see, oh, everything is on green. I'm in control. I've done everything. I've communicated to every couple what they need to know and stuff like that. So it's
now.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
No, I'm sorry to cut you off. I was just thinking when I've seen the screenshots of your software and hearing you describe it, and it absolutely seems like something that's valuable for the wedding photographers. But I do know that there's other types of solutions out there that do similar things, not necessarily specifically for wedding photographers, but just for any business in general that they could implement. So what did you have to come up with to make your product unique that appealed to wedding photographers who might have already been using something similar that was just for a generic business or anyone in general?
Yeah, there are solutions out there because I looked at those as well. But they are never, because the wedding date is set in stone, it will not change. And normal project management software has a flexible end date, you know? It can be changed, but this can never be changed. So I really had to create those workflows around a fixed shoot date. And that's different from most other parties or software products.
Well, you'd said before that you were hesitant to hire a developer to get the software going. Why was there such a problem trying to get into that? Just because maybe you don't have a lot of software background, or is there another reason that maybe that's why you were worried about that?
Yeah, it's just scary to start spending real money on somebody working on your product. Well, you don't even know, yeah. I had pre-sales, of course, otherwise I wouldn't even have started, but yeah, still it's scary. And I had no experience whatsoever with software development, except for like 7 or 8 years back when I did some Visual Basic. But I had no idea what to ask someone.
Yeah, we're in that same boat too.
Yeah.
So you actually paid with your own money for hiring the developer?
Yeah, first from all my pre-sales money. I did around 2,000 euros in pre-sales before I hired a developer.
Okay.
And I just kept on pre-selling because I wanted to fund a big chunk of the development from that money.
So you didn't use your own money. You got it from the pre-sales from the people that you had talked to.
Yeah, I'm now using my own money as well because I wanted to keep going with development, even though I don't have enough time to do sales. But it's a choice. And I know I'm doing this for a certain reason because my developer doesn't want to stay on for longer than a year or something. Mm-hmm. So I want to get the max out of this year and keep him working on my product because I'm really, really happy with him.
So how many iterations did you go through when you initially drew up maybe just a sketch of the product, and then you went to the developer and showed it to him, and then you just kept going back from the customers to the developer. How many times did you have to do that?
Oh, I don't know. I think the iterations were already like in tenfold, 10 times before I even started looking for a developer.
Oh, so you were just sketching it yourself?
Yeah, I sketched it on paper. I scanned it and showed it to a friend in the foundation who was a developer as well. And he broke it down and I sketched it again. And he broke it down and I sketched it again. And then I drew mockups in Keynote and I showed it to photographers. And then I changed it again and showed it to photographers. And I changed it again, I think around 10 times. And then I really had a nice looking minimal viable product that wouldn't take long to develop.
Well, I'm sure that's a scary process when you take your sketch and you're showing it to your original customers, because you don't know how they're going to react. You don't know if they're going to be very excited about it, or they're going to be maybe just be like, that looks awful. I don't want to do this anymore. What was their initial reaction when you showed it to them?
Well, the first three or four gave me lots of feedback, so I didn't go into those conversations with a sales pitch. I just wanted to hear their feedback if it was really solving their problem, and I iterated from that. And then when I thought, well, this looks kind of cool already, then I started going into the conversations with more of a sales intent to get the pre-sales. And I knew at that time that this was an MVP that could be built in a couple of weeks, because I really wanted to show them what they would get for their money in time. Yeah.
So how many software developers did you test before you found the right one?
I tested only two, and they were both excellent, according to somebody else, because I don't know how to evaluate it.
That's always good to get a referral. So you didn't have to go on Odesk or anything. You already knew someone who referred that person to you.
No, I did go on Odesk. And the foundation had a whole document, drew up how to create a nice job description for a developer. And I used that, and I made a mistake still. And a friend in the foundation corrected those for me. And then I got like 40 or... I don't know how many replies, and I filtered through them based on criteria, also from the foundation. I think everybody knows this, insert a couple of keywords that they have to list, and stuff like that, tricky stuff like that. And they have to answer some questions, and if they didn't answer the questions, then I could just skip them. I just followed those requirements, and then I was left with three. And I asked them all to do a test, which was also provided by the foundation. It was a Ruby on Rails test. And then, Ruben Gamez from BitSketch was so friendly enough to evaluate the tests for me. And then I had two left. So one already contacted me on email and on Facebook, and he did it really quick, the test, and he had humor, and I really like humor, so I hired him.
it's always is an adventure hiring a VA on Odesk or on Elance or something like that. And you listed a few of those techniques, like listing questions that they have to answer, or use the word armadillo in your response, or else I'm not gonna accept you as one, as a viable candidate. Yeah. So I think those, I learned the hard way to do stuff like that. So it's good that you had the foundation to kind of guide you in the right direction with that.
Yeah,
and I'm guessing you still use things like that for the VAs you recently hired.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I now have a VA who can help me hire people according to the same tips and tricks. So
very cool.
It helps. Yeah.
Now with ShootZilla, you've kind of gone over what it did or what it does, and we'll link people to the actual page to if they want to learn more. But I want to know some more about what sets your product apart from other, competition or other options they have. And one of the things I saw on the website was that it integrates with social media. How important was you for your product to integrate with social media, and what exactly does it do?
Yeah, so far it doesn't integrate a whole lot yet. It just looks up their avatar of the brides and grooms. So, you know, the day before the wedding, what they already look like. Because 6 months later, you tend to forget all the faces. And so that really helps. But I want to integrate much more so that you can see the latest of their timeline and stuff like that. So it's easy to stay connected with your clients, even though you don't see them for a year. But that's something for the future. Right now, it's just the avatar and the social media account name so that you can connect with them. But that's a manual thing.
Well, that's cool. That's still a step in the right direction and,
yep,
you know, moving towards the right thing. Now, something else that the website says about the product that I found rather interesting was that you're guaranteeing a certain number of bookings for people who sign up for your service and your software. What is that about?
Yeah, there's a part in my software where you can, well, let me explain how that works. A wedding photographer gets booked and then that day is just off the calendar. You know, I get booked for the 1st of August, 2014. And then the next person comes along and he wants to book me on that day. And I have to say no, which is really a bummer. But yeah, I can only sell myself once as a wedding photographer. So I build in a feature that you can easily refer your clients to other colleagues. So you will send an email to your bride from Shootzilla and you can insert colleagues, URLs, and a small pitch that they wrote themselves. And that's like three clicks. So it's really easy to make a bride happy with some rather good alternatives. And it's really nice for wedding photographers out there to be referred to your client, of course. So it helps both ways and it creates a nice karma for the photographer. And I'm sure everything that you send out will come back. So I'm guaranteeing for booked weddings because of that. And it's an experiment. We'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, it definitely caught my attention as something different.
Yeah.
Now, so let's talk about where Shootzilla is at today. When we last heard from you on Mixergy, you were just about to launch, and now you're three and a half months, somewhere like that after launch. Where do things stand now? One thing that jumped out to me was you said that now you're putting your own money in, so that leads me to believe that maybe the revenue is not coming in as quickly as you want it to be to reinvest in the company. Can you kind of give us a snapshot of where you're at right now?
Yep, right now I am coping with all the work that comes with getting people to sign up, because it's difficult when you have a product. When people enter as a trial customer, they come into an empty product. So they really need a lot of guidance to fill up their product with their customers when they're not even sure they want to use it. You know, it's a chicken and egg story for SaaS, I think. So I need to call them and help them see if they want to enter their clients or not, you know, see if they can be interested enough to convert. And that's a lot of work. So I've now outsourced a couple of things, you know, calling to the US. That was for me impossible because I have to do that at night. And so now I've got a VA who can call and do the foreign customers that are trying the software out. I kind of told myself it was okay to do less sales and just focus on making it more automatic. So I'm working on doing a lot of videos to make the onboarding process better and more smooth, stuff like that.
So how much revenue are you making per month?
Right now, around 600 euros. So that's definitely not enough yet. But yeah.
So what's your prime advertising? Is it you're hoping word of mouth, or are you trying internet leads, or how are you working with that?
Yeah, at the moment it's just SEO, search engine optimization, and that's also with a reason, because I found that the conversion rate is too low. I really need to get people from trial to conversion. That number needs to go up. And that's why I'm creating the videos and have others responder in place now, so they are guided to use Shootzilla in 2 or 3 weeks. And when that number is up, I will definitely get more traffic to the site, and I'm using partnerships. I will be using partnerships for that, and maybe some Facebook advertising. I just have to test out which part works.
So those who initially did the pre-sales and whatnot, are most of them still using it, or did a lot of them drop off?
No, they're all using it. Yep.
Okay. And they're getting a discount rate because they're the ones who made the pre-selling upfront?
Yep.
Okay.
They are.
So out of all, you have a bunch of different prescription subscription plans. You have a pay per month, pay per year, pay per 2 years. Which do most people usually go for?
So far around 50-50 to the year plan and the monthly plan.
And a lot of, you say a lot of people, they start off with the free trial and they're not sure, I guess, what to do. So you have to kind of guide them through it. Are you trying to work on with your developer on maybe making it more user friendly so that you won't have to spend as much time doing that?
Yeah, it's not really a matter of user friendliness as it is that it takes work to put in your clients. And if you're not sure if you're going to pay for it, then it's a waste of your time. And then there's always the time aspect that no one ever has time. So yep. You need to battle those two things before people will convert. Yeah. So I'm also offering a setup service that people can send me all their contracts and I will get them in the system, you know, so they don't have to put in that work. So I'm working on all different systems to make that conversion rate go up. And then after that, I can just turn on the traffic. But I need to get the conversion rate up. Otherwise, it's a waste of money and traffic.
So it sounds like you've got a really great product and you're taking these steps to maybe solve these additional pains. Like you just said, a setup service. Maybe people were hesitant to do it because they thought that front end work would be too much. So you're taking the step to help them with that as well.
Yep.
Now that you're solving all these pains, what's your growth strategy from now to take it to something that's viable as, you know, a full-time income coming in?
What I just said, I mean, I don't really have a growth strategy as in month X, I will do that, but I'm just working, prioritizing my work now on getting that conversion rate up from trial to paid. And after that, getting the traffic up. That's basically the step.
It sounds like you're more taking things just one step at a time and not trying to look at step, you know, 4 or 5 before you get through step one. And then yeah. is that kind of your plan, is just to see where step one goes and then you'll decide what step two is?
Yeah, it has to be for me. Otherwise, I mean, there's so much content out there and you get overwhelmed with listening and reading all the good advice, but they don't apply to me now. And I need to focus my time now on getting all that stuff out there and creating stuff. Otherwise, yeah.
And that's more of a personality thing on your end more than how things always work, you think? Have you seen other people put together a growth strategy that has, you know, the next 8 steps that they can follow, whereas for you, you think that might not be as effective?
I have in my mind a lot of steps that I can still take. I just didn't plan them out yet, if that's what you mean. And yeah, everybody works different, definitely. So it might be that other people have planned that out, but I try to focus on the short term first. And I know where I want to be in 5 years and in 1 year and stuff like that. It's just more in my head than on paper.
Okay. Now, I mentioned earlier that a lot of times we've spoken to a lot of foundation graduates who have gone back and actually become mentors and helped out with the foundation program. Is that something you're interested in ever doing?
Yes. Maybe I will be coach in the next foundation. So who knows?
So what did you get out of the foundation that you really feel like you couldn't have gotten anywhere else that leads you to want to keep that connection and help other people do the same thing?
For me, it's definitely the foundation community, or just the community, because yeah, it's separate from the foundation. Now we all know each other because of the foundation, but we just hang out in the same Facebook groups and share things, have masterminds together, you know, it's priceless. Everybody is in the same boat. Everybody has the same experience, has done the same 6 months, and some are just building their SaaS, some are already making money, you know, but everybody is in the same, faces the same challenges. So you can help each other tremendously.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to hear if anyone at home is listening about or is listening and thinking about starting a SaaS product for themselves. What's one thing that you, one piece of advice that you can give them that maybe you wish you had had before you started?
One thing that I've posted on my my laptop holder is less analyzing, less thinking, more action. Because I tend to analyze and think about stuff way too much before taking action. So I need to just do much more things, and that really helps, because you will learn from that, and it's the only way to make progress.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. That's that whole analysis paralysis thing. The more you analyze things, the less you're likely to do.
Yeah.
So,
and also one thing that's also a really good advice from a friend of mine from the foundation, Jordi as well, is to go on an information diet. Find a couple of sources that you trust, that you know are doing well. Read everything and listen to everything from those sources and leave it at that. Because there's so much information out there that, yeah, you get information overload and you don't know who to listen to anymore and what to do. So just pick a few that you know are the true experts and then leave it at that. That's also good advice.
Yeah, that's very good advice. And we've heard countless number of guests say the same thing. And obviously, if a lot of these successful people are saying that's one of their keys to success, then there's something to it. So that's definitely, we appreciate you giving that tip. So where can we go to find out more about you, your current projects, and anything else you might have going on in the future?
Good one. At the moment, I don't really have a home on the internet. I have lots of different homes, but they're all related to my businesses. So, just go to Shutzilla. If you want to send me a message, you can email me from there. And happy to help if anyone has questions or anything.
Okay, well, we'll make sure not to refer to you as our homeless guest, at least. We'll just point people there and not mention that you're a nomad jumping between all the different homes. How about that?
That's good.
All right, Esther, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Entrepreneur Showdown Presents. Tune in every Thursday morning for another amazing interview. To hear all the past episodes and find out more, visit EntrepreneurShowdown.com.